So the case I'm going to examine this morning is from the Transmission of the Light, which is a Japanese text that we've inherited from our Soto ancestors. And every case in this collection has to do with transmission. And we call this case number 2, but it's actually the 3rd case in the collection. One of the many things I love about Zen. Oh, yes, thank you. Anyone who's behind the fireplace, please feel free to relocate. I will pause now so you can do that. So you can come into the aisles, anywhere you'd like. And I encourage you to do so. And come in front of the fireplace. But I think if you're where you are, you can stay there. That's fine. It's just people behind the fireplace. Great. So here's the case. Ananda asked Mahakashyapa, "The world-honored one gave you the kashaya of golden cloth. Did he give you anything else?" Kashyapa said, "Ananda." Ananda said, "Yes, master." Kashyapa said, "Knock down the flagpole at the gate." And the poem by our ancestor Keizan, who collected these koans, goes like this. The wisteria has withered, trees have fallen down, mountains have crumbled level with the plains. Flooding cascades have overflowed their banks, fire flashes forth from the flint boulders. Now this case also appears in our Gateless Gate collection, the Wumen Guan, where it was collected by Zen Master Wuman, and it was that collection precedes this collection by Keizan. Some of you know it as Case 22, those of you who worked in the Wumen Guan. And in that original case, Wumen doesn't mention anything about Ananda coming to awakening, which I think is really interesting. Many of these koans, many of these cases of stories, of dialogues that we've inherited from our ancestors end with someone having a big turning and an awakening. And so in the Japanese version, there's a big awakening. In the Chinese version, just strike down the flagpole at the gate. Now, for those of you who are a little bit new to listening to koans, to listening to talk, in fact, you may not really be able to follow the logic of these stories. They're just like calling the third case, case number 2, they're sometimes puzzling to the logical, rational mind that likes things to be in a certain order, likes life to be in a certain order, likes to have a bunch of boxes to check off so that we can know that we have completed our duties, likes to have everything neat and together. And we don't, in spite of the fact that we have all these guidelines for being together at Sesshin, we call them guidelines, we don't call them rules, because they are guidance for how to be together in good company. But they're not about right and wrong. And koans are not about right and wrong. Those of you who work with koans, after a while, you begin to notice that coming into Doksan and passing a koan is the same as coming into Doksan and not passing a koan. Because whatever happens, you leave with a koan. And that's as it should be. Because in my view, life itself is a koan. Life itself is completely mysterious. difficult to understand, difficult to comprehend. Things seem to happen, and if we try to trace it back, oh, this happened to me because of this one thing that happened when I was 10 years old. We're missing something. We're missing the great aliveness of this world, which has so many causes and conditions. All of these causes and conditions, all of these things that have happened in what we call the past, have led us to this moment right now. And we can't go back in time, in spite of what some movies and television shows will tell you, and fix things so that the result comes out differently. I'm sorry to disappoint any of you who think that's true, but that's the way the mind works. We say, oh, if only this happens after we have a car accident, or after we trip and fall, or after something happens that is beyond those kinds of things, something happens that we look back and we think, oh, if only I had done it differently. One of the many great delusions that human beings with our big brains can speculate about. Our big brains get us in so much trouble, and yet they also make the way possible. Everyone in this room, everyone listening to this talk, everyone who encounters the practice of Zen, as we said last night, you have entered a path where even if you decide to jump off the path and hide in the bushes beside the path, you are still on the path. Once you've taken that first step, the world seems to cooperate and take you along in a way that is unpredictable, at least to our small, ordinary minds. This unpredictability is part of what makes life alive, what makes life interesting. If we knew what was going to happen, things wouldn't be so interesting. And maybe sometimes we prefer that. But that's just another one of those little delusions that we comfort ourselves with. So one of the things that happens sometimes along the path is that we have insights. We have what are called awakenings. Things are like this, and then suddenly something happens and we realize, oh, they have never been like this. They're really like that. And a new world opens, and we go forward on our path of being people of the way, bodhisattvas, and then something else happens. The teachers were talking last night about something, I can't remember, but I do remember that Josh talked about how we sometimes have this feeling that we're heading in a straight line, but the reality of our lives is that suddenly we take a sharp right turn. We might say the path takes that sharp right turn, and all we can do is follow it. This has been my experience throughout my Zen life, that I was pretty sure how things were going to unfold. When I first started sitting with my first teacher, I idolized him and idealized him, and I wanted to be like him, which was pretty funny because he was a 6-foot-tall Canadian and I am a 5-foot-2 American. Plus he was a guy and I'm a girl, different parts. But I wanted to be like him. I wanted to have his deep voice, his certainty, his wisdom. And he played along with that, which made him both a good teacher and a bad teacher for me. And I stayed with him for a long time. I had wonderful experiences where the road kept turning to the right and turning to the left, and I had terrible experiences where the road kept turning to the right and turning to the left. And then eventually I realized that he was no longer the teacher for me, and I became a Dharma orphan, and then I found James Ford. And when I met James, another detour on the path, which was the path itself, and things shifted once again. And ultimately, James gave me what we call in Zen transmission. That is, he decided that I understood enough of what he was teaching to carry forward his teaching into the future. All of us who are sitting up in the row near me have received either what we call full transmission or part of full transmission from our teachers. Josh and I received it from James. David received it from his teacher, George Bowman. Kate received it, at least received the first part, which is called Denkai, from Josh. And James Cordova received the first part, the Denkai transmission, from me. This is why we wear yellow robes and yellow raksus, the so-called golden raksus, where they're not made of gold, they're just dyed this color. Although, in my research on this koan, I discovered that the Buddha's first robe was woven by someone in his sangha of brown cloth, and somebody else decided it wasn't fancy enough and threaded gold threads through it. And this is what we sometimes call the gold robe of the Buddha. So this is our way of continuing a tradition that may have been made up, but I'm not going to go into that. So we wear these colorful robes while everyone else is asked to wear black and brown and dark colors as a sign that somebody, somewhere, hopefully someone with insight, decided that we too had insight. And here's the tricky thing about this. The other side of this transmission, this giving of the Dharma from one person to another, is that everybody already has it. There's nothing that's given or received. When we have an awakening experience, either a very little teeny tiny one or a big one with rainbows and ponies, that is realization, that is awakening. It's not anything that is foisted upon us by the universe. It's not something laid on top of us. It's suddenly an ability to see what's been right in front of us the whole time. And we might say that the whole enterprise of Zen is designed to wear away all of the barriers to what's been right in front of us all the time. We think that enlightenment, awakening, realization must be some really cool thing. And it's really tragic for those of us who have had the rainbow and pony type, because then we have to get over that. Because rainbows and ponies don't last. In fact, nothing lasts, but that's another teisho. These experiences that we have where things drop away seem so wonderful, but the job of being a Zen person, a person of the way, a bodhisattva on this path, is to keep going no matter what, and eventually even those experiences, which are temporary, as all experiences are, fall away, and more we have a clarity about what is right in front of us, and it's been right in front of us all the time. The thing we've been longing for is right here. And the problem is we have ideas about the way it should look, feel, sound, smell, taste, so that we don't see what's right in front of us, don't smell, taste, and touch what's right in front of us. We don't hear the calling of the traffic as the awakened nature. We don't hear the way the floorboards look as the way awakened nature looks. We think it's somewhere else, and we keep looking for it. And we hopefully find someone, a teacher, a guide, a fellow traveler on the way, who can say, maybe stop looking over there and look right here. Wu Men said, it's like someone looking to the south to find the North Star. This is what human beings are like. We look everywhere but right here, because it couldn't be this. This is too ordinary. But it is tremendously ordinary when all of the delusions that prevent us from seeing this drop away, and we see that delusion itself is what we have been yearning for and longing for and seeking everything as it is, the great way manifesting. But we have to have things ripped away so that we can actually come forward. And in our way, in Boundless Way Zen, we see, I'm speaking for the teachers now, that every single one of us is already an awakened Buddha. The Buddha just means someone who's awake. All of us are Buddhas. We say all of us are bodhisattvas, wisdom beings. There are no exceptions, not even you. And I know you can probably come into Dokusan and make a case for why you're the exception. And we will listen to you. And then we will say, okay, look here. That's our way, to continually point you towards your own awakened nature. Even you're complaining that you are the one exception in the whole history of the universe to this teaching, that too is the awakened mind, the awakened heart manifesting itself. It's a little hard for the logical mind to understand this, but this is, of course, what is realized. So this little koan, this third koan in the transmission of the light, has this wonderful verse by Keizan. One of the best things, in my view, about this collection is the verses that Keizan wrote after each one. And this one is about everything dropping away, being blown away, being taken away. And this is a necessary prerequisite for what has to happen before realization can occur. All of our ideas have to be seen through. All of our strong views that we cling to with so much energy, we can't see them as the awakened nature until we see how they're preventing us from seeing them as the awakened nature. And you can quote me on that, if you can remember what I just said. And then the second part of the verse is about what happens when that stuff is either worn away through many, many years of practice or is taken away by certain circumstances quickly. Circumstances might be being at a sesshin, having something awful happen in your life. Doesn't matter what the causative factor is, but something rips away the blinders and there it is, undeniable. And when that happens, life gushes forth. And sparks can arise from two stones rubbing each other. Great waters, great winds, great fire. This is the promise of this practice. And this is how Keizan puts it. The wisteria has withered. Trees have fallen down. Mountains have crumbled level with the plains. If you just stopped there, that might be a good description of what it's like after a day or two of sesshin. Maybe after a few hours of sesshin. We come in thinking we know what's going to happen, and then the wisteria withering, that's not so bad, but what about these trees falling down, and what about the mountains crumbling level with the plains? Well, that's how it feels sometimes. In our lives, in our so-called ordinary lives, as well as our Dharma lives, in my view, there's no difference. And then he goes on to say, flooding cascades have overflowed their banks. Fire flashes forth from the flint boulders. This translation is by an American. It's a wonderful translation. Fire flashes forth from the flint boulders. This great fountain of wisdom and compassion, which is our birthright, is restrained by our thinking about it, by our ideas about it. And when it comes forward, it's undeniable. So here's the deal. You can't make it happen. You can't study and read books to make it happen. You can't even come to Sashin and sit with great devotion and steadiness and make it happen. You can't pass all the koans in the world and make it happen. We don't do it. It is done to us. The great world is waiting for us to realize this simple truth that everything we need is already present. David and I went down to New York last weekend where David officiated at a wedding for someone in our Sangha who has left the area, Gary Karskadden. Maybe some of you know him. His wife died a couple of years ago suddenly. He was, of course, devastated. And because of the strange way the world works, he met someone and fell in love, and they got married last weekend. And he's so happy, and she's so happy, and their whole families are happy. And there's sadness, too, mixed in with that, because Gary's first wife was such a strong presence in the lives of their children and aunts and uncles and nieces and Gary himself. For me, this is the way some joyous things happen, mixed together with sorrow. And David did a wonderful job, as you can imagine, officiating at this, looking really cool in his priestly duds. And people were very impressed, and afterwards they wanted to know. Somebody asked at breakfast the next morning, "Where do you go to study to be a Zen master?" You know, where's the school? Somebody online, I guess James Ford wrote this thing about ordaining to be a priest and receiving transmission and different ways that different schools do it. And this whole thread about all the different ways that people have gotten transmission, it started to get really silly, and one guy said, "I got it off a matchbook cover, and it was given to me, some bird dropped it on my head." But in reality, and the way we answered the question, is we explained that it's really an apprenticeship. You can't go to school and study to be a Zen master. It's that gradual wearing away done with usually, traditionally, one person who you meet with in Doksan, and you help wear away each other, really, so that you recognize each other's hearts, minds, so that you recognize each other's Buddha nature. In Boundless Sui Zen, we do encourage people to have a primary relationship with one of us, and then also to study deeply with the rest of us, so that this is a little bit of a different way than other Zen traditions. Even though there's a primary teacher, all the other teachers are also primary, just as important. The Dharma holders, the senior Dharma teachers who can give Doksan and talks, and the transmitted teachers. And there comes a certain time in our lives, and we can't make this happen, as I've said, where a teacher says to us, "You know what? You've been sitting for quite a while. I'm going to teach you how to play a bell or a drum, or I'm going to teach you how to chant. I'm going to teach you how to do some of the liturgy." And then maybe you become a practice leader in Boundless Way Zen. And then after a while, one of these difficult and annoying teachers comes up to you and says, "I think you're ready to start giving Dharma talks." There are many different reactions that I've encountered when I invite someone to be what we call a Dharma teacher, that is someone who can give Dharma talks in Boundless Way Zen, varying from, "I've been waiting for this. Boy, you slow. I've been so impatient for you to recognize how wonderful I am." When that happens, I always hesitate and think, "Uh-oh, what did I do?" But maybe that's some recognition. The most common reaction is, "What? Who? Me?" And eventually we say, "Yep, you." And then the Dharma talk begins. The Dharma talk giving begins. And we work with you because it's an apprenticeship. And we teach you how to give Dharma talks. All of the teachers help you to give Dharma talks. In fact, the Sangha helps you to learn how to give Dharma talks. And it's an ongoing process. And then at a certain point, one of those annoying teachers might come up to a Dharma teacher and say, I think it's time for you to start doing Doksan interviews. And then we teach you how to do that. And then one of these teachers, who we call senior Dharma teachers, we realize that something has shifted in a fundamental way, that it's no longer about the job description. It's no longer about leading practice, explaining things to newcomers, giving talks, and doing Doksan. But some strange thing has happened where we meet with the other person and we see that that other person has our heart. How did that happen? And it's not like took it away and I no longer have a heart, but that the heart has expanded to include the two of us so that we are similar, never the same, but there's what we call Dharma entrustment has started to happen. In Boundless Way Zen, we don't ask you to do things like this until you've already demonstrated that you're doing them. It's not like you suddenly leap off a cliff. But this Dharma entrustment that allows you to become a Dharma holder in our way and receive what we call Denkai transmission, this is something that is non-linear and non-logical, but just feels right. And so this is what happened for me when I gave Dharma entrustment, Denkai transmission, to James Cordova and also to Diane Fitzgerald. And it's what happened to Josh when he gave it to Kate. It's what happened to our teachers when they gave transmission to us. And Ananda himself has a long history in the lore of Zen that I won't go into this morning. But one of the things about him was that he was born at the time that the Buddha saw the morning star. That's the legend about him. He was born when the Buddha saw the morning star. So he's about 30 years younger than the Buddha. And he had a wonderful way of absorbing all the words of the Buddha, and magically he remembered everything the Buddha said after the Buddha's awakening, even the things that the Buddha said when Ananda was a newborn baby. And that's why all of the traditional teachings that have come down to us begin as, thus have I heard. That's Ananda talking. He recited everything that the Buddha said after the Buddha died. But he, in the Buddha's lifetime, did not receive transmission. And according to the lore, he didn't have his full awakening. And so he attended the Buddha's disciple, the second ancestor, Mahakashapa, one of the Kashapa brothers. Maha means big. He was the big Kashapa brother. And he's the guy who smiled when the Buddha twirled a flower. So this is the story of when Ananda, who was serving Kashapa, realized his true nature. And even more so, it's when Mahakashapa recognized Ananda. A mutual recognition. Is there something more that you got when you received transmission? Ananda asks. Is there something more than the robe? What is it? What is it? What is it? It must be something wonderful, special. I certainly don't know what it is. What is it? And the answer that Mahakashapa gives is very important. He says, Ananda. He says Ananda's name. What's the thing? What's the thing that you received? He says, Ananda. And Ananda responds, yes. And that's enough. And this knocking down the flagpole, one of the meanings of it is that a flag goes up at the beginning of a Dharma talk and is taken down when the Dharma talk is over. Knocking it down is a little more violent. It means it's over. You've got it. So, at this session, tonight, I'm going to give Denkai transmission to Bob. And tomorrow night, Josh is going to give Denkai transmission to Steve. Two people who represent the way completely uniquely and who have our hearts. They have David's heart and Josh's heart and my heart. This ceremony is going to be private. We used to call it the secret ceremony, but I always thought that sounded like the secret sauce. It'll happen after most of you have gone to bed, traditionally at midnight, but we're so old now we make it a little earlier. And in this transmission, nothing happens. Something is recognized. Something that has been here all along is recognized. Ananda, yes. Bob, yes. Steve, yes. That yes is what everyone here has already said. Yes, I want to wake up. I want to know this for myself. I want to know that what I've been longing for is already here, because when you talk to me about it, it just doesn't make sense. But yes, yes, I'm here. I'm here for it. The best I can be, to the limits of what I can do, which is different for every one of us. Ananda asked Mahakashapa, the world honored one gave you the kashaya, the kesa of gold and cloth. Did he give you anything else? Kashapa said, Ananda. Ananda said, yes, master. Kashapa said, knock down the flagpole at the gate. The wisteria has withered, trees have fallen down, mountains have crumbled level with the plains. Flooding cascades have overflowed their banks. Fire flashes forth from the flint boulders. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and if you haven't come forward, if you're behind the fireplace, you can come forward even more for our Dharma dialogue. And today we've decided that there are too many of us up here to all answer your questions, because then it would be mostly the five of us talking. So each day, only three of us will be answering questions. Today, I am supported by James and Josh, and Kate and David will sit in silent wisdom. But tomorrow, they'll be sharing their wisdom, and some of us will be quiet. So, questions, observations, anything that's coming up for you, complaints, clarifications. Yes, Cindy.
I'm really grateful to be sitting in this ship of compassion, going down some rapids. Sometimes it feels like, you know, a slow paddle in the sun on the lake. Somehow the practice has stuck for me. Even when I didn't want to do it, it never really left. And my life is so rich with so much joy and so much hurt and so much love. He died earlier this week at 63 years old. Mm-hmm. And my children would show up and he couldn't even look them in the eye. Mm-hmm. And just the endless hurt of his not being present. I'm just so grateful for whatever it was that allowed me to sit with whatever came up that maybe wasn't so nice and wasn't the ponies and whatever else you said. But it definitely takes the sting out.
Thanks, Cindy. I really appreciate how you just articulated the way joy and sorrow interpenetrate. Thank you. Is it a hand that I think, Paul, you'll have to help us. Oh, it is Paul. It's Paul himself.
Yeah, there's something appealing about the ponies and the rainbow that's there. But I don't think that's for me. in the phrase that you said a few times, just kind of vibrated in me. And it's this idea of ripping away. Ripping away. This is just such a mystery to me as far as the simplicity that's here. And it's not a question for me to figure out in the sense of what's being ripped away, what's being left, what arrives that's there. In many cases, when I hear that phrase, ripped away, stopping the struggle. It is being present. That's it. At one level, I have no idea what Buddha nature is. And at another level, I'm soaking in it. And I'm adding to that soaking.
Thank you. Yes.
I just wanted to say that I was really touched by this talk, and the way that as you gave this talk, things that happened, 2,500 years ago, are no longer ancient seeming, but these things are happening right now. I mean, that story about Mahakashyapa and Ananda, that's not an old story about 2,600 years ago. It's happening. It's happening right here, right now. And it's so encouraging. And, there's a tendency in Buddhism, one tendency, about how things are just getting worse and worse, and the teachings are getting diluted, and Bodhidharma's enlightenment wasn't like Mahakashyapa's 1,000 years before, and Hakuin's wasn't like Bodhidharma's, and ours, God, forget it, it's done, we're just sort of scraping the sauce off the bottom and getting a little fumes, this this sangha doesn't feel that way. So,
thank you.
Yeah. The transmission in the koan, where you're talking about what happened tonight. Is it a big and wonderful thing?
Can people in the back hear? What's the little signal? Is it this when people can't hear? So it just put, if you can't hear, put your fingers up like this, and we'll ask people to speak louder.
I'll speak more loudly.
Thank you.
So these are about very large and wonderful transmissions that will happen tonight, and what was in the koan. And I just wonder if would you call it transmission also the many smaller ones that happen? Because those often seem to me as miraculous. Anytime I get something through my hard head, or when I get something across to someone, even, meaningful things or just directions to the gas station, sometimes it seems pretty miraculous. And I put it somehow in the same category, maybe a smaller version, but then not so much smaller in some ways. Does that seem like something?
Mm-hmm. Either of you want to speak to that?
It is a recognition, right? Just like in the sutra service, you know, that things can't help but shine with this light. And I sort of love the imagery of, you know, somebody giving you directions, right? And that being a transmission, right? Mm-hmm. Like no separation here, and this wonderful little miracle of like understanding, kinda what they're saying, and how the whole world shows up to put us together, and to take us apart.
And Dogen talks about the teachings of the insentient, the rocks and walls and pillars and trees constantly unfolding and presenting the Dharma, and we receive the transmission attending to that. We receive the transmission of our aching shoulders, our aching ankles, our aching knees. And Dogen also talks about correctly receiving the transmission from yourself.
Yeah, I had I was watching my own internal reactions during your talk, and a whole bunch of stuff came up, but in a curiously kind of outline, sketchy, non-juicy form. But you know, real. But I mean, basically, you know, envy and jealousy and achievement. And I've been meditating as long as these people. Why don't I get this or the next? And you know, that there's I'm so used to being the good student and the achiever and all of that. But and no, those kind of reactions have been really juicy and powerful at times. But this time they're coming up almost a cartoon. They're there, but they're kind of flattened out and just not as juicy and dimensional. And I thought, what is that that's making that flatten out? And it was your talk last night about we're not really here for us. And I just thought, oh, I'm so glad it's not all about me. It's just so wonderful that it is not all about me.
I so appreciate every single word you just said, because I appreciated everything else everybody else said. I want to make sure that I say that, but that desire to say that is one of the shadows of our way. Mm-hmm. That everyone is the same and everyone is different, and there is hierarchy in Zen. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like a level playing field of Sangha. And it is a level playing field of some. It's both those things, and what do we do? And this is the example, because it's not about us personally. And yet sometimes we make things about people personally. You know, we elevate people, give them colorful robes. It's one of the great paradoxes of our way. David and I started out in religious life as Quakers, just for a brief time, so we could get married in a Quaker ceremony. We were devious young people, and we appreciated the Quakers because they didn't have a hierarchy. But of course, once we got to know them, they had a hierarchy, but they didn't talk about it. You know, so there was the elder, and he was really in charge, and there were the people who'd been, but everyone was the same. That's their shadow. Our shadow is almost the opposite. And to mention the jealousy there is really important, because of course, and that's great. Thank you. I'm sure you're not the only one. Yeah. And jealousy has all these different aspects too, because people who are receiving these honors think that they're not worthy of them. You know, so it's like reverse. It should be somebody else. Right? It should be Julie. I mean, it just goes on and on.
Really?
Right? So this is so great. Thanks.
I also want to appreciate the shift in feeling tone just between those two experiences. You know, that place where like it is all about me and my achievement, and what about me, and how and it seems like the shift to, it's not at all about me, like it's about everybody else, right? That shift to saving all beings ought to feel heavier, but it doesn't.
It doesn't. It doesn't. It feels so much lighter.
Yes, Jessica?
I'm just struck by all of these paradoxes that seem to come up in the talk and that seem to be here. And one of the things I appreciated was this kind of description of enlightenment as ordinary. It's like paradoxically extraordinary and ordinary at the same time, that it's not some like thing that you're going to get and that's supposed to feel this certain way, and just kind of just reminding us, you know, that it's here already, and we're it's like on the one hand I'm having the hardest time ever, and I'm doing better than I ever have. We're getting like another paradox, talking about like scraping off the blinders, right? And so on the one hand, as I kind of slip out of my daily practice, aware of the consequences of that, while at the same time being so caught off guard by, that happened again? Oh, okay. And then I'm becoming like a weekend warrior, but with self-care binges. It's a different experience. And so to try to find this, you know, there's that paradox again. And so how I can maintain all of these things, but then also not try to maintain anything and just be. So I'm going to be sitting with paradox this week, I think, or however long we're here. Thanks.
I love the self-care binge. I'm going to put that on my to-do list. Maybe last comment from Nick.
I wanted to just respond to Josh's comment about the trees and rocks teaching us the Dharma. And for me, this is a fruit of my practice. My wife does not practice Zen, but she's a gardener. And for me, it's very obvious that it has exactly the same function. The trees and plants are teaching her Dharma all the time, and she gets that intuitively. And when we got married, she would point this out to me, and I'd say, "Oh yeah, yeah," and it drove. Why she put up with me, I don't know. It must have been completely intolerable. But now, a fruit of my Zen practice is I now get it. The trees and plants really do talk to me, and when she points out a beautiful tree and flower, yeah, it's wonderful. So I really—that's a small fruit of practice, but it's really—it's been a very good thing. Yeah.
Well, and you know that experience you're naming connects to what you were saying before about these little transmissions. Yeah. You know that. Zen is one way that allows us to have those experiences, but there are many, 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 many other ways.
Yes.
And everyone has to find that way for themselves. Mm-hmm. So how wonderful that you two found paths.
Yes.
And that you happen to be accompanying each other on parallel paths, I would say.
Some people fall into this stuff naturally. Others, like, us, need the remedial class.
Yeah, really.
Again and again and again.
All right, so the remedial class continues. Thank you.